From beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, in our first hour, libertarian Bruno Barron, libertarian Eric Cohen, and conservative Republican Jeannie Ives. And in our second hour, economist Mike Miller, and also Charles Lipton from the University of Chicago, and college professor Mark Casello. Our program tonight, coming to you from our own base at my home in beautiful downtown Chicago, as well as AM 560, The Answer. That's the Salem station in Chicago. And again, tonight, if you do not know, tonight is the final program in the Beyond the Beltway series. It went on the air in June of 1980, so a little over 44.5 years. And again, tonight will be our final broadcast. We're going to do a regular show talking about, obviously, I mean, we could, I think, pick a Sunday that had more news going on than it does tonight. I'm not ready to accept accolades for solving peace in the Middle East. I'll let Biden and Trump figure that one out. But again, we've got three regular guests on this program. They've been on for many, many years. We're going to start with Jeannie Ives. She is a talk show host, former Illinois state representative, former candidate for Republican nomination in this state, Illinois. And Jeannie, I want to ask you the question. Are you optimistic that this peace is going to last?
No, not at all. I mean, that's been the historical trend, actually, that it hasn't lasted. And the fact that they are exchanging essentially in the first tranche of the first six weeks of this hostage exchange, they're exchanging 33 hostages for 110 prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, who have been convicted of all sorts of things, murder, terrorism, you name it. And the fact that that's going to be the exchange and some of those folks are going to go right back to their old ways is very bothersome. Let's not forget that when in a previous hostage exchange, the mastermind behind the October 7th attack, Sinwar, was one of those folks exchanged in an earlier hostage for prisoner exchange. And so, I mean, I do think that there's going to be a lot more cautious actions taken by Israel to secure its border. But I don't know that the peace will last forever.
Eric Cohen joins us. He is a regular on this program, also has been a frequent guest and sitting in for me when I've been away. Eric, what's your take on what happened in the Middle East?
I agree with Jeannie. I don't think that this is something that's going to be enduring. I mean, a real long-lasting peace is only going to be the kind of thing that follows a clear and unambiguous victory. And we don't have a clear and unambiguous victory. And we also have a long history of the parties on the other side of Israel in this conflict not adhering to the agreements that they set forward supposedly to agree to. I think Israel is acting in this moment in part because I think there is some regime uncertainty with regard to what Trump's position on foreign policy is going to be. He is a more isolationist type than they've been dealing with previously, especially in Republican presidents. I think he's on Israel's side, but I don't think Donald Trump wants a protracted conflict in that region, even if a protracted conflict in that region would be good for the long-term chances of peace, because it would perhaps lead to that kind of victory. So I'm glad to see that we're going to be, some of the hostages are going to be returned. It's not all of them, and we should keep that in mind. But whether this will last, I don't see how you can think it would.
Bruno Barron, you also join us. When Donald Trump says, if this thing is not solved by the time I take office, all hell is going to break loose in the Middle East. The fact that we only have three Americans out, does that mean that that bravado by Donald Trump really hasn't been taken seriously by those negotiating this agreement?
No, I think everything is going just fine. Quite frankly, I have a slightly different take than Jeannie and Eric, and that is I'm cautiously optimistic that the ceasefire won't hold. Trump didn't say there better be a ceasefire or there will be hell to pay. Trump said, you better get the hostages out or there will be hell to pay. And this was a hammer, not over both parties' heads, but it was a hammer over Hamas's head. And they were essentially told, look, this is the best deal you're going to get. Like, Hamas always negotiates that Israel has to leave Gaza. Well, they didn't get that this time. Israel is still in Gaza. Hamas always negotiates where they get something where they, oh, the war's over now and we can go back to building the infrastructure for murdering people. And they didn't get that. Basically, they were left with a fait accompli that said, you take this deal because right now at this moment, this is the best you're going to get. I sound like a very, very aggressive hawk here, but I don't really care. I think once the hostages are out, I hope something bad happens where Israel just restarts everything. Israel has Iran up against the wall. They've gotten rid of the Syrian problem. They've had help getting rid of the Syrian problem. I don't know about the Houthis. Hezbollah is almost gone. It's a mere rump of its old self. There's now an air corridor over Syria to hit Iran, and Iran's back is against the wall. I think what Trump is setting up is that setting up Israel for the most part to say, you know, once we get these hostages out of here and once we have things figured out, we'll give you free rein to get things taken care of. I think, and I'll take this one step further, everyone rational in the world, and that means everyone who doesn't agree with Barack Obama, everyone rational in the world knows that the worst thing that you could possibly have for world instability is for Iran to get a bomb. So the regime is either going to change or they're not going to get a bomb, but it's just time for all of this stuff to end and go into the Abraham Accords and make things work. And I hope that's what's happening. I'm cautiously optimistic that it is.
To those people that heard what Donald Trump said about all hell breaking loose, didn't many of them who voted for Donald Trump, didn't they believe that he meant bringing American hostages home? And here on this day of celebration, we have three Americans home, and I'm just wondering how much cheering can there be for that, Eric?
I mean, limited. It has been a disgrace over the period of time that Americans have been held hostage by Hamas, that it has not been a larger focal point for the American people, that it is not something that President Joe Biden, or considering his infirmities, his spokespeople have talked about on a regular basis. So I don't know how you can regard this well when there are still Americans who are being held hostage there. And I believe after this deal, there's still going to be Americans who are held hostage.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are going to be talking more about that after the inauguration tomorrow. You're listening to the final broadcast of our program this evening, Beyond the Beltway. If you'd like to call in, 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night, including on beyondthebeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
AM 1160 and you're a Christian who owns or runs a business, you might not realize that the great Christian programming you enjoy is advertiser supported. That's right. Unlike some other Christian radio stations, we don't accept donations from listeners and we don't raise money to fund our operations. Our loyal audience loves to do business with our advertisers who make it possible for us to share the gospel on AM 1160. Now, it probably won't surprise you to learn that there are some advertisers that avoid stations like us. And that's okay, because our audience responds to businesses who choose to support our faith-based programming. If that describes you, then we'd like to invite you to join the growing list of successful companies who reach new customers who share their love for our programming, become a part of making a difference in the lives of listeners throughout Chicagoland, and who are passionate about supporting our great family of advertisers who are part of AM 1160. To learn more, just visit 1160hope.com/advertise. That's 1160hope.com/advertise.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Chris Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. Let me just mention that this program will end this evening. However, if you are interested in future things that I may be doing, podcasts or whatever, please make sure that you are a follower of Beyond the Beltway or a friend of Beyond the Beltway or like Beyond the Beltway on our Facebook page, because that way I can keep track of you and I will alert you when we do things in the future. Again, the principal purpose, for those that did not hear me say a couple of weeks ago, the principal purpose of me leaving this program is one of health. Since June of this year, when I celebrated my 80th birthday, I've had some very serious health issues. I'm 24 hours a day with oxygen, as you can see, I'm wearing in my nose. I let my beard grow, and I have some serious issues of being able to make it here every Sunday night. And I share that with you personally because I consider those that have tuned in my show for the umpteen years that I've been on, I consider you friends even though I may never have met. So I just, the toll of, and the commitment to be here every single week is really, it's just too much for me now. So I'm here at the end of the Biden administration. This is the last show of the Biden administration. And we'll talk about that as we move forward. But again, I want to let you know that if you want to keep track of me in the future, just you want to be a friend, you want to be a follower of Beyond the Beltway, and we'll be in touch that way in the future. Now, before the break, you wanted to make a comment. Go ahead. You wanted to make a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly address something that Eric said and a question you asked. Like, I don't mean to be callous about the American hostages or the Israeli hostages. Obviously, it would have been a much better situation if that could have been addressed much faster. I hold Hamas mostly responsible for that. I just think that when you're looking at the grand scheme of how everything is playing out in the Middle East at a very, very important time, I think the considerations have to be broader than just getting the hostages home, you know, now or getting them home faster. And those things have to be taken into account. So, you know, what I was trying to say earlier is that I'm pretty cautiously optimistic that the right people have the upper hand in this situation. And that's better than if they didn't have the upper hand.
In response to that, very briefly, if I could,
go ahead.
And just really briefly, Bruce, if I could. It's not that I disagree with Bruno on the high level point there, that there are absolutely huge geopolitical considerations there. Mine was more of a domestic political point, which is that I think it is utterly shameful that we have lost any focus on the idea that there are Americans being held hostage by a terrorist organization, and it is almost just not spoken about. And you compare that to the Iran hostage crisis, where that was a, you know, day 300, 400, whatever it was, of them in captivity, and we've just kind of forgotten about them, and I think that that is utterly shameful.
I agree. Fair enough. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Jeannie. He's a regular caller. Jeannie, what are you going to be doing on Sunday night when we're away?
I think it's
Hello,
Judy.
Jeannie, are you there?
Is it Judy?
Joy.
Joy. It's Joy.
Joy. Joy, I'm sorry. Joy. Go ahead, Joy. So Joy, we have a problem with Joy. Joy has been a regular listener to this program. She calls every week. She usually has a very astute comment to make. She's usually left of center. But we'll get back to her in just a moment. Speaking of left of center. Jeannie. All right, let's go. Jeannie, go ahead. In San Diego, go ahead. You're on the air.
I don't know if you're go able ahead. To hear me very well. My reception's terrible. Can you hear?
Yes.
Yes.
I just, no. Yeah.
Joy, you know what? We're
I think we lost
whatever
her.
The not working.
Well, it would have been nice to talk with Joy, considering that the wildfires are still going on. And she's sitting there in San Diego.
Joy, are you wildfires away from you? Well, we can't carry on the conversation with Joy. She hung up. She's been a regular listener to the program for many years. I want to go back to in my view, the ungracious farewell address by Joe Biden the other night. Jeannie, I'll let you take it. Is there any more, let me just put it this way. Is there any more appropriate way for this dunce to leave us?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. He hasn't been in charge. He hasn't been really running the show. So he wrote something that some other staffer scripted out for him. There's no doubt. I mean, I think what was really revealing this week is the Mike Johnson interview that he did with the Free Press, where he essentially told the tale of going into Joe Biden's office, wanting a few words with him because he had a lot of concerns about a myriad of issues. And at one point, Joe Biden excuses his staff, and Mike Johnson has a real conversation with Joe Biden and says, you know, I'm from Louisiana. Why did you shut down our LNG exports? They're really essential. And Joe Biden essentially said, I didn't do that. No, sir, you signed an executive order. No. We are just having a study done. No, that's not what it was done. I mean, it was so revealing about the fact that Joe Biden had no idea what he had done for 4 years and that essentially his staff, high-level staff, have been running the White House. And so for him to come out and have any sort of goodbye speech, final sign-off, who cares? Actually, who cares at this point? He didn't write it. He said some words. He probably felt some of it was true. But, yeah.
Does history, Bruno, have to have a serious discovery of exactly what happened during the Biden administration? Because we have over 3.5 years of not really knowing who's making the decision, and even the lateness with which he decides that he's not going to run. I mean, this was a serious dereliction of duties by the vice president, by members of the cabinet, by the Washington News media. I mean, when we look at this administration, do we need a serious deep dive as to what went wrong to make sure it never, ever happens again?
Well, I don't know that you could ever, I don't know that you could prevent it from ever happening again, although it'd be nice if we could find a way that you could. You don't know what, I don't know that it would be the best thing for the Trump administration to go into that kind of an investigation, but I do tend to agree with you that if, you know, leaving aside the optics and the political blowback, a Warren commission of some sort would be worthwhile for at least one reason, and that is that, you know, probably for the first time ever, maybe when Edith Wilson took over from her husband when he had a stroke for a year and a half, but that was a long time ago and it was a little bit different world. You have a situation where at some level, every president relies on his cabinet to some degree, but at least the president is the one with the executive authority making the decisions. I think it's fairly obvious now that, you know, Joe Biden, you can't even call Joe Biden worst president ever or almost as bad as Carter because you didn't even know that he was president. You could say that the junta, the cabal that was running Joe Biden's puppet strings, clearly they were the worst administration ever. We don't know if Joe Biden was the worst president ever.
Yeah. Eric, any comment on that?
I would just briefly correct Bruno because he seemed to imply there that the worst president ever was Jimmy Carter when he actually was right earlier on in what he was saying. It is definitely Woodrow Wilson. But this is kind of to the point. We had a circumstance like this where the first lady was essentially acting as the president. It is one of the things over time that helped lead to the 25th Amendment. And the 25th Amendment was not used in this case. So I don't know that there's any possible way of preventing this. I agree that I don't think it would be wise for the Trump administration to spend really much of all of its time trying to investigate these things. It should be left to historians and probably all of the tell-all books that are going to come out. But because it is something that is politically unwise and petty and a distraction, I fully expect it to be something that Donald Trump will push to do.
Okay. But we'll see. When we look ahead, we're looking ahead to an inauguration that, not unlike 40 years ago when Ronald Reagan had to go take it inside, Donald Trump will take it inside into the Capitol tomorrow at noon, where he will take the oath of office. And again, that's going to put a lot of people out in the cold. We don't know whether it's going to put any of the octogenarians out in the cold or any of the oligarchy, either one. None of them should be out in the cold. But Jeannie, what about you and about the warning that Joe Biden made, is that America is on the cusp of maybe control by an octogenarian class?
Well, I mean, look, he's the last person who should be. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, he's the last person who should be talking about somebody else controlling a democracy or our republic. And by the way, he kept calling it a democracy or a republic. I'm not sure, but I am sure Trump's going to do much better than Joe Biden. And the Biden administration was the worst ever, in the entire country. I think even worse than Woodrow Wilson.
When we come back, I want to pick up a subject that we discussed last week on the show with we had some semi-regular guests last week. We talked about the last 44 years and the significant movers and shakers and issues that really define the conversations here on Beyond the Beltway. When we come back, I want to get thoughts as to who the defining figure or figures were of the last 40 years. I'm Bruce Dumont. You're listening to the last broadcast of Beyond the Beltway Live from Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. Drive safely.
This is Carol Platt, Liebau for townhall.com. 60 Minutes isn't the must-see TV it once was, but it aired a recent interview with outgoing FBI Director Christopher Wray that by rights should be grabbing everyone's attention. Wray disclosed that China has successfully inserted malware into America's critical infrastructure. Our top foreign adversary can wreak havoc on our water treatment plants, transportation system, electric grids, and natural gas pipelines whenever it chooses. Wray essentially admitted that our enemies hold a death grip over our domestic security and our economy. But during his tenure, the FBI prioritized things like rounding up January 6 protesters and targeting Catholics and parents at school board meetings. Perhaps Americans now suspect they'd be safer and more secure had Wray's FBI paid more attention to China than to Washington politics. Let's hope Christopher Wray's politicization of the FBI doesn't end up costing all of us dearly.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey. Want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show him you love him. Keep him safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, our final broadcast in our series that started a long, long time ago in 1980. And at this point in the show, we let each of our guests take a moment to introduce themselves, tell us things that they want people to know. So we're going to start with Jeannie Ives. Jeannie?
Well, first of all, Bruce, I want to thank you so much for having me on your show for really the past decade, and then also let me host it while you were not doing well. And I'm just sorry to see that you're, you know, you have to give up the show at some point. But boy, 44 years is such a great run. And you've taught me so many good skills that I now use on my own radio show. It's also on AM 560 Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Real Story with Jeannie Ives. And our niche is sort of Illinois politics, Illinois figures. And we talk about all the issues. There's not a single issue that we don't discuss. And that's because I really appreciated the broad reach of your show covering so many topics across the nation of interest to everybody. So I want to thank you so much for your work in radio and appreciate you and hope you have a great retirement.
Jeannie, you were a great guest and you're a great talk show host. And you're one of about a dozen people who were regulars on this program who've gone on to their own careers in talk radio. So we, again, thank you very much for that. Eric Cohn, tell us a little bit about yourself when you're not appearing on this program. And again, also, I thank you and Jeannie for sitting in for me a couple of years ago when I was having some health issues. And you sat in for me about 13 weeks, and I do appreciate that. But tell us more about you got a new job. Tell us about it.
I do. I'll get to that in a moment. But similar to Jeannie, I want to thank you for the opportunity both to be a guest on this program and to fill in for you at that time when you needed a guest host as somebody whose political understanding came a lot from listening to talk radio. It's been an honor to be able to be behind the microphone and host a program because it was what I really wanted to do from that first moment that I discovered Rush Limbaugh all those years ago. But I'm now the chief marketing officer at Empower Illinois. We are an organizing group that is working on school choice in the state of Illinois, what I think is a really important issue and something that is inevitable. And my mission is to help make sure that Illinois isn't the last to adopt something that is going to be so important and so good for families. I was previously the director of marketing communications at the Acton Institute, and I also appreciate, Bruce, you letting me talk about the documentary film I was able to help produce there, The Hong Konger, a story about Jimmy Lai, political dissident who is still on trial in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. I encourage people to check that out at freejimmylai.com.
Bruno Barron, you were a libertarian on the radio before it was fashionable.
Well, yeah.
Tell us about
I had a radio show myself, probably from about 2005 to 2008 or something. I also, it was weekend time, which I had to pay a little bit of money out of pocket to do, but I was the first live local host on WIND decades ago when it went from whatever format
wow.
it had back to Salem. And to talk, I was the first live local host doing my show on the weekends. So all three of us have, radio wannabe or radio star. I'm probably more in the wannabe. I had to move my show over to Facebook, where I now harangue people regularly on Facebook. I haven't done any Facebook Live, though. But everybody out there knows me well enough. I've been a political consultant. I've been with the Heartland Institute, which is where the libertarian comes from. Actually, most of the work I did at the Heartland Institute was on school choice. So I'll have to talk to Eric after the show and find out, what kind of quixotic, crazy thing we can do here in Illinois to try and bring school choice to a state so enthralled to the evil teachers unions on the planet.
Well, before the show went on the air, talking to Jeannie Ives about issues that were important, and school choice is very important to her as well as everybody on the show this evening, and most of our guests, at least from a conservative perspective. But Donald Trump doesn't seem to have really grasped this. This doesn't seem like a pet issue to him, so I don't know whether much is going to be done in the next 4 years on this issue, at least nationally. But I'm just wondering whether this becomes an issue for whoever replaces Donald Trump, because it is an issue that I think draws a lot of MAGA people together, but it isn't necessarily the red blood issue that gets people riled up, Jeannie.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's the deal. School choice, if you're looking at the coalition that Trump built to get elected, which was a lot of those folks who were upset that illegal immigrants had come in and taken over a lot of them funding that they wanted, yeah. At least in Chicago, there was crime issues with them, housing issues, you name it. They also felt the pressure in their own local schools when they had illegals in there as well. And so this coalition that Trump built based on crime and illegal immigration and economy and inflation is the same coalition that should be very receptive to school choice. And in fact, they are. And the fact that he did not embrace it fully or speak about it much in his rally, I thought was really a mistake. But it doesn't mean that he won't do something. It'd have to happen in the tax structure. If they're going to do one big, beautiful bill, maybe we can get some sort of national tax credit scholarship going with all that money. And, essentially then all that the Department of Education becomes is a tax credit scholarship granting organization, something like that. I mean, that would be great. I think that's a lot to expect, because he also seemed to have picked a really, interesting choice. I guess that's the nicest way I can say it, for labor secretary. And so I think a lot of us have a lot of concerns over that choice as well. And that seems way too union friendly, especially given the chokehold that the teachers unions have on our public schools and how devastating that chokehold has been.
Well, that'll be an interesting issue to watch and review. From the bill, to see what happens, because it is primarily a state issue. But again, it would be nice to get a little a kiss of approval from the president, and that doesn't appear to be happening, but maybe it does. Let's go to some phone calls now. I understand that Marty Garrity is listening to the show. Marty, is that you?
Hello, Bruce. I'm sorry that this is the end of your show. You and I have been there, I don't know, I was there probably in 1982 with you when we were looking for places to have to broadcast from when it was radio only. And, this is a sad day for me, but it's a happy day for me in that you are going to be taking care of yourself.
Well, you appreciate that. I mean, you have been a regular listener to this program. And again, like many people who are regular listeners, you become a very good friend in life. And I appreciate your call tonight. Now, let me ask you this question, because you also are someone that's near and dear to the issue of school choice. So elaborate a little bit more as to how that can become a more successful issue at the national level with Donald Trump in the office for 4 years.
Well, one can only hope that Donald Trump will pay more attention to it. I know for me, it became an issue for me when my first child of six went to a public school in Evanston, and he was reading ahead of where the other kids were. And they told us, well, just be patient. Just don't, we're not going to do anything for him. Just it's important for him to be socialized here. And we took him out of the public school and we put him in a private school where they actually accommodated the needs of this child. And they were not interested so much in their own welfare as the current public school monopoly is. They were interested in the welfare of the kids. And nowadays the teachers unions have converted public schools into a horrible monopoly that simply runs things for its own benefit and rather than for the, but it uses those children. It's as though they were delivering food to kids and the truck drivers delivering the food were saying, hey, we're delivering food. You've got to give us everything we want. Just do the job for your customers and don't go claiming that those customers themselves are the reason we should give you more and more and more money.
Okay. Marty, thanks for your call. Thanks for your friendship over the years. And thank you for all the calls and all the support over the years. We're going to move on. Last week on this program, we asked the question, looking over the last 40-plus years, who were the defining figures? Now, last week, people came up, and they were sort of evenly divided between Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, and Barack Obama. Does anybody want to step forward and make a case for either of them being sort of the defining political figure of the last 40-plus years since we've been on the air? Bruno, what about you?
Can I?
Well, if you think about it, I always try and think, like, is there somebody behind the scenes or is there another kind of public figure that might have been as prolific and maybe not even in politics? But I think you'd have to – I think if you look at those three names, I don't think they're equally impactful yet. I think clearly the most impactful was Reagan. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of that impact has faded over the last 5 or 10 years. The times and the situations are much different than they were in 1980. You definitely have to give Barack Obama credit for accomplishing what he accomplished, despite the fact that I disagree with almost everything he did. And then Donald Trump he's shown us a great deal of what conventional politics has failed at, but I don't think he's proven himself yet. And he's proven some things, but he hasn't proven enough. That would be the way I would put it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When we come back, I want to get the other responses to this. And also, if you're listening and want to chime in with that, 1-800-723-8029. Our last night opening the board for calls. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away. More coming up.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
You're smart. You're busy and don't have time to waste on the mainstream media cycle. Salem News Channel breaks that cycle. Topics that matter from hosts worth watching. Dinesh D'Souza, Andrew Wilkow, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. Salem News Channel, not like the other guys. Watch anytime on any screen, free, 24/7. Find everything you need to know at snc.tv. That's snc.tv.
Why's the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry. We're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As I said before, tonight is our last broadcast of Beyond the Beltway, and in thinking about this last few days, a lot of names have crossed my mind, and I wanted to take a moment to rattle through them right now, scroll through them, because they are important, and after 44 years, I do want to take a moment that they be remembered. First of all, there's Carol Nolan. She was the general manager of WBEC in Chicago. She is the woman who in 1980 thought it was a good idea when I suggested that we have a political show by, for, and about political junkies called Inside Politics that would cover the presidential primaries between Jimmy Carter and Ted Kennedy, and also between Ronald Reagan and George Bush and John Anderson. And so she said, 13 weeks, give it a shot. She did. She supported it. So did Ken Davis, the program director, when we went national in 1989. But also, for the last umpteen years, Fritz Goldman, who you hear me reference, he has been our television, radio, and director. He keeps everybody on the air. Fritz, I want to thank you very much for showing up here every Sunday night, even when I don't show up here to do this program. You have been an absolute rock in so many different ways, and I want to thank you for that support. Also, our website, Todd Nebel, has been a terrific supporter. And in the early days of this program, before Fritz joined us, Tom Veracruz, he's no longer with the program, but he was with us in the early days when we set quite a standard. Tom Trattop was the general manager of WLS Radio, and when you got a call in radio and someone asked if you wanted to be on WLS, the answer was yes. I was on the public station at the time, but again, Tom Trattop made that happen. 22 years. We served on WLS, and that's probably longer than most of the big shows that are associated with the Big 89. When WLS pulled the plug on it, we had a track record. On the air at least once a week, every week for well over 23 years, and WCGO up in Evanston, Illinois, used to be WLTD, which is where my radio career began. They put the show on the air, so they kept the nonstop treatment of Beyond the Beltway with a small station up in Evanston. And again, we were there for well over 2 years. Then the big call came. That was the shift to WIND, Salem Radio in Chicago. And when I was growing up as a kid, this is the station I always wanted to work for. It was a talk station then. It's a talk station now. I've always wanted to be on WIND more than any station in town. And again, Jeff Riesman was the one that gave me a call, along with program director Marcus Brown. They helped make the move to Sunday night here on 560 at WIND. And again, the president of Salem Radio, David Centrella, was also a key factor in keeping the satellite distribution of the show going. We had a network of stations of about 25, 30 stations when we left the station in Evanston, and we had to keep them going. So we kept them going because of Jeff Riesman and also David Centrella at Salem Radio. And again, along the way, you meet program directors. Some of them are assistant program directors, and they move to the top. Bill Kelly in Ohio, the great state of Ohio. Mark Caesar at KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Kenny Reimer, who was a guest on this show, afternoon talk shows there. KLBJ has been very important, having a major station. It's one of the major stations in the United States. Ted Jenny up in Oregon. Ted Baker in Geneva, New York, the Catskills. We've been on in the Catskills for well over 25 years. Jerry Rose from WPLN in Chicago put us on television, but he wasn't the first to do that. That was Juliana Richardson. She put us on Channel 25 because she thought that Beyond the Beltway could also work as a television show, and I think she's right. Bobby Meehan in Houston has put us on in Houston. And of course, a lot of people don't know, but you remember, if you're longtime listeners, you will know that once upon a time, we came from Oprah Winfrey's radio studio. We were without a home, and John Guerin, who was running Oprah Winfrey's production company at that time, Harpo Productions, gave us a home on the west side of Chicago, and we did that for a long time. In addition to that, there's the Friends, there's Robert, there's the Marty Garrity, who you just heard. There's Dan Miller from Crane Chicago Business. One of the great journalists in the city's history was also great. And Robert Peter, of course, the official media scribe of Chicago, he too has been great. And then over the years, the support of my family, including for the last 28 years, Kevin Fuller, the love of my life. He has been a rock solid friend and partner in life for 28 years. So those are the people that have kept me going for all these years, for 44 years. And again, as they say in the business, you know, you shouldn't forget the little people in the business. Well, in this case, none of these people were little people. They were big people. They made a decision for themselves, which also helped me, and it gave me the opportunity to speak to each and every one of you every Sunday night for over 44 years. But it's like over 2,500 shows. When you factor in the fact that I was off for 13 weeks when Jeannie and Eric Cohen were hosting the show. So again, thank you all. The second hour of the show is not going to be a repeat of this. We're going to continue to talk about contemporary issues. But again, you've got to say thank you, and you've got to remember. The people that remember who helped them on the way up the ladder are very special people. And also, likewise, the people that don't remember who helped them up the ladder, they're not good people. They're not good people. They don't have the value to thank people and remember people for helping them up the ladder. You heard this evening, you heard all of our guests this evening make comments about their help in their radio careers because I had them as guests on the show. I want guests who came here ready to play, who were spirited, who loved their issue, who could defend their issue. Because I know when they spoke, they were speaking for thousands, if not tens of thousands of people out in radio land and ultimately in TV land and through the gift. So again, we thank you all. Those are the people that helped. In the second hour, we're going to say farewell to Jeannie Ives. We're going to say farewell to Eric Cohen and also to Bruno Barron. Thank you for being with us tonight, folks. I really love you all. And we'll hopefully meet again someday in some radio broadcast studio somewhere. Thanks for tonight.
Thanks.
Another full hour coming up.
Thank you, Bruce. Go away.
Remember, you too are mortal.
Bruce Dumont back. This is hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. In case you just tuned in, this is the final broadcast in our series after 44 years. And so, again, if you like the show and want to call in, tonight's the night to do it, 1-800-723-8209. And another thing that's very important, the series Beyond the Beltway is going away, frankly, because of health issues that I'm having. That's why I'm ending the program. However, I do want to continue to do things in radio or from time to time. So if you're listening to the program this evening and you like the show, make sure that you are a friend of the show or a follower of Beyond the Beltway. And that way we will capture who you are, because in the future, if I decide to do a podcast or special interview, I will reach out to you and let you know that we're doing something special. So if you've never done it before, tonight's the night to do it. To let me know that you like the show and that you're a fan of the show. We have a whole mailing list of people who are fans of the show, and they are basically our followers. And again, get on that list, and you'll never lose track of it, unless you want to lose track of it. But in that case, turn off the radio right now. tonight we have, in this hour, we have three more guests who have been regulars on this program. And again, I want to introduce them. Mark Costello is here. He is an English professor from the college in St. Joseph's College of St. Joe's, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. He's an emeritus from that great institution. And also Mike Miller joins us after 38 years at DePaul University. He moved west. He is now an economist for Western Washington University. And again, in the last hour, and actually part of last week, guys, we talked about the defining personalities of those past 44 years. Let's look at some of the issues or some of the social movements that really defined the last 44 years that this program went on the air. And Charles, we're going to begin with you tonight.
I think one of the social issues that really defined the era is the complete incorporation of women into the white-collar workforce. And I believe the nearly complete acceptance of gays in general in society, including gay marriage. So there have been tectonic changes in the way we see each other. I think the final point I would make has been an increasing centralization of power in Washington and within Washington, within the executive branch. And I think that you're now seeing a lot of pushback against that. So I think that will be one of the defining battles of the Trump second term.
Mark Costello, your comment.
Yeah, I would say there's three movements I think of over the past at least 20 years would be the Tea Party movement, then kind of the response to that in the Occupy movement that came after. And then, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement. I think those three really been pushing and shaping our discourse, and we're kind of seeing the backlash from some of those here as Trump's about to come into office.
Mike Miller, what would you add to the list?
I'd ask two things. One would be abortion, which I thought we had kind of dealt with. And then once the Supreme Court did overrule Roe v. Wade, it seems like there is a push in this country to just not embrace a rare and safe and so forth, but to somehow actually elevate the concept of abortion. I just don't know where that comes from. I find that very damaging. The other one I would say is social media. I agree with both of my colleagues in terms of important stuff, but social media has been so wonderful and so damaging, so wonderful for people like me that I can keep in touch with my brothers and my sister in Tampa. They're very far away. We can't travel all that time, but we are in touch with each other all the time because of social media. But at the same time, it really has infected our young people where they can seem to have no interaction with other people. Even something as silly, maybe it sounds, in my classrooms in the old days, during a break or whatever, yuck, 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 students would be talking to each other and it would almost be a din in the room. And now when I take a break, there's no sound. Everybody's nose is in their telephone. And I just see that social media has been so good and so bad at the same time.
Well, let's look ahead to social media. Let's look ahead to TikTok, which is a key issue. It was shut down last night. I guess opened a little bit this afternoon. And obviously, the president of TikTok is going to be sitting side by side with Donald Trump at the inauguration tomorrow. And again, the idea of enforcing the Supreme Court, that's going to be left to the Trump administration, which has been a hot potato for both administrations. And my question to you, Mark, is since you deal with a lot of young people in the course of your profession, what do you think will be the ultimate decision on this?
Well, I mean, certainly there's going
to be a... find a buyer.
Yeah, it seems to me that you're going to have some, you know, moneyed interest step up from the U.S. And take it over, buy it out, a la Twitter, a la X. We may be in that kind of position. The students, you know, that I serve are content creators, and they're pretty fluid as far as platforms. So I think if TikTok were to change substantially, they would just find another platform very quickly and adapt. They're very facile about the latest apps and things, but it's more about who's their audience and where can they get their message out.
Mike, go ahead, Charles.
One of the issues about selling it, according to my friends in the tech sector, is that the Chinese don't want to sell the algorithm that really powers the thing. And without the algorithm, it's not clear what the platform is worth for just the reasons that Mark was stating. I'd add one more really important tech change. The coming of AI is just tectonic. What we're talking about on the first issue is really, on the one hand, all these social connections that Mike was talking about. You can talk to your sister in Tampa, even if you're in Washington State. But on the other hand, the class ends and nobody's talking to their fellow classmates. They're on looking at texting. They don't even consider email communication anymore. It's just texting. But AI is going to be a big thing, Bruce.
Mike, how do you see it changing your life?
AI is, Charles, I think, is right. And economists have been trying to get ahead of this, doing research on what we think the effect of AI is going to be. And we know that oftentimes what drives a spike in productivity is some kind of major breakthrough, such as transistors or electricity. And then it was personal computers or the spreading of computing. There is some chance that some economists believe that AI will be as profound as all these others, that it will make so much difference and raise productivity so much that all of our lives will be better as long as we are ones who can keep our jobs. And so the people who don't know, that aren't savvy enough to get involved in this industry are going to have to find, I don't know where they're going to find work. It's going to be tough.
When we come back, I want to talk more about this and also about news coverage in America for the next 20 years. I'm Bruce Dumont, expert listening to talk.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bonkam examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Just about back in Chicago, you're listening to the last broadcast of Beyond the Beltway. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'd like a look ahead, folks, to where we are in the news media. First of all, where were we 44 years ago when there were just three big networks giving us news? And where we are today, and I don't know whether the public is that much better served today than they were 44 years ago, but what about in the next 20 to 30 years? Mike, I'll let you start there, given the economic aspect of what we're dealing with here, with news and just disseminating it.
In terms of the technology, of course, and it's going to change because of everybody can have now, can have their own podcast and so forth. The Rogans of the world, I think, are going to be very important. But the fact that there's essentially no trust at all in what we would call the mainstream media is their own fault. And I don't think it's going to get better. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the universities, especially as departments of communication, where most J schools are, they are they are echo chambers. I think they did a survey of the top schools in the country in their departments of communication. And in most of the schools, they found there was not a single person who considered themselves either conservative or Republican. So, you know, like Andrew Sullivan said, we're all living on a college campus now. I think that the unfortunate thing is that the entire pipeline of new journalists coming out is going to be more of the same. So the only thing that can possibly make any sense is for us to have more of the of the Rogans and the individuals who try to find the truth. But the mainstream media, where most of the people get their news, I'm afraid is going to continue to be a cesspool of bias and lack of truthfulness.
Mark DeSello, you see it that way?
Well, I see it differently. As a communications professor, I have to say that there are conservative voices on my campus. You know, the college,
too?
You would think, oh, it's kind of a radical Catholic college, but quite a few Trump supporters in the group. There's students in the journalism class over the past few years who are conservative, and we don't silence those voices. And so I think I'm a little more hopeful and optimistic than Mike in some ways. But my worry is just the information literacy of my students. You know, it's one thing to go out into a world that's a bunch of YouTubers. But if you're not armed with the ability to evaluate the content that you're receiving, And then with AI factored in, producing content and feeding perhaps misleading or incorrect information, that's what I'm most worried about in our students and in our democracy is the capacity of us as citizens to be able to trust anything that we receive from mass communication, whether it comes through YouTube or a podcast in the next 40, you know, 20 years, even 20 years. So that's what I'm concerned about. But I do, we still teach classic journalism, corroboration. In fact, I just quizzed my students on Charles' three principles of academic honesty this week. And they all passed, at least knowing the principles, applying them is another. But so, yeah, that's a little bit, I would say, Bruce.
Charles, your assessment of this issue?
Well, now that I know that Mark is using my books, obviously I agree with him. At risk of becoming an echo chamber here, look, I think that there was an earlier era in which Huntley and Brinkley were on NBC and Walter Cronkite could say, and people believed that's the way it is when he said it. That consensus began to break apart in the late 60s with the Vietnam War, and it has what you see now is a fragmented media environment in which people are tuning. There are fewer and fewer programs like Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, where there are people on the left, people on the right. People are there are podcasts in which, for the most part, people are tuning in to hear their own views reinforced. They want to hear an echo, and that's bad. And I would add one more point. More and more teachers are saying that their students simply can't read a whole book, that they have been trained on short attention span media. Much of it visual media. And I think that that's also cuts into our ability to think in an independent way.
Mike Miller, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I'm glad that they're more sanguine about the whole situation than I am. I'll tell you, here's another example, I think, of what I'm saying. You know, the New York Times just wrote a very lengthy article on pushing out Joe Biden. They knew all this stuff a long time ago, and only when it could do no damage to the Democrats, did the supposedly the newspaper of record decide to come out and say, "Oh, look what we know." Again, that to me is that's malpractice, and I think it's malpractice because these people do believe, as they're taught in many J schools, that they are morally superior and they are going to do whatever they have to get across their ideas. And I don't have much faith in what the press is going to be doing. And that pushes us to look for alternatives. And, you know, those alternatives may not be all that reliable either. I wish we had a reliable press I could turn to.
Yeah. They don't seem to have understood why so many people turned against them. In other words, they still don't know the answer to the basic political question. Why was Hillary so bad? What made the Donald Trump a phenomenon, such a phenomenon? Because they totally, Bruce, they did not have their ear to the ground.
Bruce, the great film critic Pauline Kael, made the statement that I think is the closest answer to what you said. And that is, she said she didn't know how Nixon could have been elected. Nobody she knew voted for him. And she was an Upper West Side New York intellectual.
Yep.
And I would say that I would bet that if you took all the journalism professors in the country and ask how they voted, you would find, you know, an overwhelming number would give Pauline Kael's answer. And their students are coming out, I think. I'm glad to hear that there's a variety of opinions at St. Joseph's. What I didn't hear you say was that there were a variety of opinions among the faculty. especially in the communication school or journalism school. There's not at Medill. There's not at University of Missouri. I've talked to a number of people there. There maybe there are at some other schools, but it's a problem.
Not at my, not at DePaul. There was no, there was no, no conservative, no voice like that. And that person would keep their head low because they wouldn't want to have it chopped off. So that's
we had to, when I was the,
don't conservatives go into business? They don't necessarily want to be a working stiff as a journalist. They want to own the paper or run the sales department and make lots of money.
They used that as a way of arguing that's why conservatives don't go into academia in general. I could buy that, except for one thing shows it to be, I think, untrue. If you go back to when Charles and I first started in this business, I started in 1980. The ratio of what we would call conservative and or Republican to liberal and or Democrat was only like 2-1 or 3-1 across the board in most all departments. And as time went on, it just got worse and worse and worse as the tenured radicals.
And become self-fulfilling.
Only like them. Exactly. The
Become self-fulfilling. Yeah.
Yes. Because why should I go and try to be an academician if I know I'm going to be shut down every time I try to come up with something new? So you just don't
Bruce,
go into academia at all.
We could, Charles. when I was the chairman of Hillel on our campus, which is an organization for Jewish students, we couldn't allow non-tenured professors on our board of directors. And this was 20 years ago, because we felt that they would almost certainly doom their chances for tenure. And this this was because the hatred of Israel was so great even then. Now it's become mainstream, but it was so great even then that people would be vetoed like Jews were for country clubs in the old days.
I'm at issue. How does the news of today, how will that affect the demonstrators on the college campus? Anybody want to jump at that?
I mean, oh, you mean the freezing, the ceasefire you're talking about?
The ceasefire, the freedom of the free of the passages, although not all the American passages are gone.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that, Bruce. I'm really curious, and I'm sure a lot of people on the progressive side are just, what happens next? You know, after the ceasefire, you've got generational destruction in Palestine. You've got Israel. How can they feel secure again? You know, if that's going to be an issue. And so I do think this question of rebuilding, the question of a Palestinian, is there going to be a Palestinian state? Who's going to follow through on that? I think there'll be a lot of activism on that side. But just the devastation that's left behind in the wake of this, you know, it's kind of like Mike was saying about how the New York Times was giving the postmortem on the Biden. Now that there's a ceasefire, suddenly the mainstream media is talking about the humanitarian needs and the trucks needing to go in and these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be
a question. When we come back, I want to ask everybody to give us an assessment of who gets the credit or the blame. I guess credit for what's happened today in the Middle East. And we'll do that when we continue. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away. Final broadcast tonight, right here. Don't go away.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate.
I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Yeah.
Bruce Dumont back, and we're going to take a moment now to introduce all of our guests and also tell us a little bit about yourself when you're not here. Mark, it'll be your last time to promote yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah, instead, I wanted to tell you, Bruce, I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity you've given me and this platform for my views that, you know, I know sometimes my views are very far apart from yours. And, you know, I met you. I listened to you. I used to listen to you on the radio back when I was in college, and I was actually more conservative. I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh back in the day, and I would listen to you on Sundays on break from my job and in my car. I would sit and listen to Bruce. And then years later, I was listening to Beltway when I was teaching out in like rural Indiana. And I would drive and I would listen to the show on replay on my way to drive up. So it meant a lot to me when I finally got to meet you. And I had written an article on a homeless individual I encountered, and you invited me on the show to talk about that article shortly after the recession of 2008. And so since then, I've been a guest on the show for about 14 years now. And so I just wanted thank you for this opportunity.
Good. Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate your always being available to share your thoughts, because a lot of times the Democrats are not. But again, I've always viewed you as a different type of Democrat. You're more of a progressive than you are a card-carrying Democrat. But again, you've always been a good representative of a perspective, a progressive perspective, which I appreciate, because to me, that's what makes a show good, when you've got different people who have different opinions on something. And that's what makes it's great. And again, when we can get them as professors, part of our professors, we had all our professors this evening. Go ahead to you, Charles. Tell us a little bit about what you do when you've not been here, and how you became involved in the show.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, if this program had a motto besides intelligent talk, it would be no yelling. People absolutely listen to each other, and we need a lot more of that. And that's always been true. And I think that the people, while we're telling about ourselves, I want to say one thing about Bruce. People who come to Chicago should go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications, which Bruce founded and made into an important institution. And he's had a life in communications, and that's, this program is part of it, but there are other parts of it as well. I grew up in Mississippi. I went to school in the East, and then I came to the north to Chicago, as so many Mississippians have done. And I taught at the University of Chicago for many years until I became emeritus. And I try to remind everybody that means great with merit. I write political columns, which you can get at Charles Lipson, L-I-P-S-O-N, charleslipson.com for free, and I'll put you on the mailing list, but I write them for a number of publications. And I have written a number of both academic books and recently a number of books for students. My latest book for students is Free Speech 101, which there are a lot of books on free speech, but this is a book for students to tell them what they can say and what they should listen to.
Good. Mike Miller, tell us about yourself.
Well, they know I'm all from Pittsburgh and retired after 43 years at DePaul, and now I'm at Western. But, you know, I wanted to say again what Mark and Charles are saying. Charles, by the way, is one of the reasons I listened to the show for so long. I was a fan before I was a guest, and it was because of Charles and Art Sear and Joe Morris that I always, Sunday night, I always had to make time to listen to these guys. And Bruce, one thing you did for me, and I told you the very first time I was on the show, I said, yeah, I'm a conservative, but I want you to understand I'm an economist first and a conservative second. And I will go where the, you know, where the discipline takes me. And you always said, absolutely fine. You never were looking for us to bring a bias and to somehow ram that bias down the throats of the listeners. And I like that. And one other thing, I know there's this expression, which I'd like to say hello or goodbye to a lot of friends who are on your thread, the chat thread on YouTube. You know, when I'm not a guest on the show, I'm on there with these guys, Patriot Mike and T-Bone and Carolyn and Just Observing. I know I'm leaving a couple of these guys and ladies out. They
keep
really
the conversation
do. They are
going.
Regulars. Yes, I was on there earlier in the first hour. These are a great group of people, and they just show the kind of Americans that listen to your show. They're intelligent, and I just hope that we add something to their, font their collection of knowledge, and so
well they can go they can, they can still go
that.
There every week.
Yes.
They can still go there every week and chat amongst themselves, and again Beyond the Beltway won't be there, but as I mentioned in the first part of the show, I am hopefully, God willing, not going away forever. Think that in the future there may be a podcast, there may be something else. It'll be a different format. It won't be Beyond the Beltway, but again, if you listen to Beyond the Beltway, please let us know that you're a friend, that you follow the show. If you do that, we'll put you on the master list, and when we do something in the future, we'll let you know. So you will know where I am, and I will know where you are. And speaking of knowing where people are, Judith Sherwin, who is a regular guest on this program, also an adjunct professor, she joins us from Washington, D.C. Judith, what are you doing in D.C.? What's happening in town?
Well, you know, there's a little event going on here tomorrow called the inauguration. And I was lucky enough because I worked in Wisconsin and I worked for the Republican National Lawyers Association.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to get some tickets. I was going to be sitting like pretty much right under where he was going to give his speech. Lo and behold,
wow.
As I was packing my ski clothes on Friday, the message came across that we were going to do this inside. And, of course, you know, I'm not one of the 800 dignitaries that are going to get to be in the Capitol Rotunda. So it's been kind of a zoo for people. You know, it's really interesting. There's lots of people in town like me, you know, who came in, who spent money on tickets and hotel rooms. God knows the hotel rooms aren't cheap. But you know, nobody is. People are bummed out that they, you know, that they have to kind of scramble to figure out how they're going to see it and the swearing in, and they're not necessarily going to see it live. But people are in such a good mood. I mean, it's really such a hopeful time. The plane ride, I flew in on Saturday, and the plane was packed with, you know, MAGA hats and veterans and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are going to kind of find this hard to believe, but it reminded me more than anything else of the time that my friend Marsha, who you may remember, and I took the Freedom Train to go watch Martin Luther King in 1963. I mean, it was a time of hope. It was a time when things, you know, good things were coming. And I'm telling you that there was kind of that same feeling yesterday on the plane.
Let me ask you, first of all, the Marsha you referenced was my first wife, Marsha Goldberg. But my question to you is, because you and I have known each other for well over 50 years, you were an anti-war Dean McCarthy supporter, George McGovern. You had no respect at all for Republicans. My question is, you've now become one of the most articulate conservative spokesmen. What happened to the world that made you change?
Well, that's a good, you know, it's a good way to put it, Bruce. What happened to the world? The Kennedy Democrat that I was, okay, the anti-war person that I was, doesn't fit in the Democratic Party anymore, and hasn't fit in the Democratic Party for a long time. I mean, look who the anti-war president is. His name is Donald Trump. I mean, look where the openness about what you know, progress in the country and worrying about the working person and all of that is. Look at where it is now. It's not in the Democrat Party anymore. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, which was a very conservative Democratic Party. And I will never forget the first time I went to a Democratic convention, which was the one I talked about last weekend when I went to see Jimmy Carter nominated. I couldn't believe these people on a national level. I was looking at them thinking to myself, who are these people? These are Democrats? They were like nut jobs, you know. They weren't anything like the people I grew up with. And the more it went on and the more the years went by, the world just changed. The Democratic Party, there is no Democratic Party like I grew up with. And the Republican Party that I grew up with doesn't really exist anymore either at all, you know. This is not your country club Republican anymore.
And by the way, in your appearances on this program, you've become quite a favorite of the fans and listeners. So again, we thank you very much for reporting from Washington, D.C. on the eve of the inauguration. I want you to promise me, I want you to buy me a souvenir. Doesn't have to be expensive.
I will.
But I want one souvenir from the Trump inauguration. Judy Sherwin, thank you very much for joining us. We will be back with our rest of our panel when we continue for the final segment of the final show of Beyond the Beltway.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
Don't miss the new movie by Dinesh D'Souza, Police State.
We have freedom of religion and freedom of speech!
Democrats, MAGA Republicans threaten the very foundation of our republic.
Are we becoming a police state?
The government is trying to crush the conservative movement, our society, and our freedoms.
They define you as radical.
How did we give the state this kind of power?
If they're coming for me, they're coming for you.
Police state. Buy it or stream it now at SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Mike Miller, we go back to you. You wanted to make an amendment to your comments about the most powerful people in the last 40 plus years.
Yeah, I was listening to the first hour and you asked the guests what they thought. And I was going to throw out something a little different. Knowing in the U.S. that it, as Carville said, it's the economy stupid. There are two people in the Republic of China that have made, I think, really important strides, one good and one bad. And that in terms of bringing people out of poverty, a guy named Deng Xiaoping began to incorporate some market-like structures into China and actually protect some property rights. And the very poorest people of China, literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of people, were brought out of abject poverty and are now living much better lives. And if only that had continued and then finally got to freedom. But now we have a man who seems to have taken everything that Deng Xiaoping did, whether purposefully or just by accident, and he is trying to take the country back to Mao. And I'm afraid you can, economists are now saying that the Chinese economy is in trouble. You can't trust any of its data. And the people of China will be the ones who suffer. So I think both of those men, one positive, one negative, have been very influential over the past 40 years.
Gentlemen, one last question. Got about 10 minutes left. Looking ahead 44 years, is it going to be four decades of war or peace? Mark DeSoto.
You know, my life in a lot of ways, even though I'm younger here, has still been defined by war. as I've mentioned on the show previously, my mother was born during the Nazi invasion of Norway. Kind of lived in the shadow of that throughout my life. Some of my first political action was writing letters to the editor during the first Iraq war, being critical of that interventionism. So with all the militarism, as far as the weapons deals that continue to go on, I don't see how, and the political instability around the world. I think we're in for another 40 years of war, but let's hope that diplomacy reigns and we can bring greater peace on the planet in the coming years, and that we don't escalate to another multinational conflict. You know, we're in a very scary time, and I'm actually, that's one area where I'm hopeful that President Trump can potentially take us in a different direction than what I've seen under President Biden.
Darryl Slipson, your comment about the next four decades.
I think that we should think of it in three tiers. The most dangerous tier is the nuclear tier. So far, that's been held back by deterrence. And I think the greatest risk there, besides an accident or a grievous mistake, would be if something like the Iranian regime were disintegrating and decided to go down with the Samson option. But in general, I think we have the power and capacity to deter nuclear Armageddon. The second are these wars like Iraq, and I think the U.S. has learned its lesson. I think that those wars will continue, but great power involvement in them will be diminished considerably. I think the third, which we don't think of as war, has been this massive invasion in Europe and in North America. You don't have to use the word invasion, but whatever you want to call it, of people from very poor areas who are not committed to democracy and indeed not committed to religious tolerance or other things. And I think that the issues of division within the West and within each country in the West are also very serious. The United States has always been able to absorb these groups, but there's a limit to annual absorptive capacity, and I think we more than exceeded it.
Mike Miller, your comment, the next 4 years.
How do I follow that? Charles, that was just, I thought that was so insightful. Okay. I almost can add nothing to that. I do think that if there is going to be some kind of a war that involves the massive loss of life, it will either be at the hands of Iran, or it will be at the hands of, say, North Korea. But I think you're right that we can avoid that Armageddon, but I don't think they will. I think, and it could be, they'll be very much limited to wherever they decide to strike. I'm hoping, of course, that I'm completely wrong or that I'm dead. Either one of those will work, but I guess I would prefer that I'm completely wrong.
Me too. You know,
yeah. I mean, both of us. That's the case.
Let's all be back. Let's all be back in 44 years.
Yeah, no, I'll only be 111, so 114.
Well, it reminds me, Bruce, of my first show. My first show with you, where I was on the air with Dwight Eisenhower, I believe.
Yes, I recall that. Well, Mark could be back.
Mark, there you go.
Yeah,
Mark, I think I'll be
95.
And, you know, I've said nice things about Charles, but to Mark, of all the liberals or progressives I've spoken to in 127 shows, you are my favorite liberal. Again, just like Charles says, we don't yell at each other. You're so sensible, even though I think you're usually wrong half the time, but it's just so sensible, and you present such a real strong case.
That's well stated, and I agree as well, but there's one, again, in a show like this, you remember the people that were regulars on this program that are no longer with us. And the one, I would say that the best Democrat that we've ever had on this program is the late Michael Bauer. Michael Bauer was
Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
He was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, but, boy, he could give a conversation and a debate. He was smart, alert, respectful of the opposition. And, again, I would just say absolutely one of the best guests we've ever had. I don't want to get into the best guests on the other side because we just had too many of them, but Michael Bauer was an outstanding participant on this program.
But how did he fall for
Bruce, on behalf of your audience, I want to raise a figurative glass to toast you for a lifetime of successful broadcasting. Hear, hear, Bruce Dumont.
Hear, hear.
Okay. Thank you very much. I love you all. Also, I want to thank Chris Goldman for his assistance in the production of this program. And for the last umpteen years, you've done a terrific job. I'm Bruce Dumont. For the last time on this program, good night from Chicago.